The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Someone's going to ask you something. You had the little ass boy conversation with Max yet?
He keeps calling everybody little ass boy. Hey, little ass boy.
Yeah, sure enough, saw him. He's a big ass boy is what he is. God dang.
Big ass boy. God. What up, brother? Good to see you. Welcome, brother.
Gardner Minshew, for now, potential starting quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders, meeting with Max Crosby. Always better to be on Max Crosby's side than not on Max Crosby's side, especially now that Max Crosby has by his side Christian Wilkins. The Raiders doing what they have to do to try to improve the team under head coach Antonio Pierce and new GM Tom Telesco. It's a Friday edition of PFT Live. We have reached the end of the first week of free agency. Shireen Williams is joining me today. Shireen, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. I'm glad this week's over. As we were talking before, we got started. Long week. A lot of activity. A lot of posts at PFT. A lot of hard work. Appreciate everything you did and everybody else has done this week, trying to keep on top of everything. It really feels like there was more movement this year than in the past. I'm sure it's not all that different, like when the season starts and guys have a bunch of ACL injuries. Like, boy, it seems like more ACL injuries than usual. It's like, no, we're just not used to the period of the calendar where guys are getting injured. I think that we're not used to the period of the calendar where guys are changing teams. The league year starts, the tampering period starts. It just seems like a lot of guys. It seems like the deck has been significantly, easy for him to say, reshuffled in the NFL in the past 3 or 4 days.
Well, you start looking at our top 100, and I mean, guys are just flying off there. And even the lower level guys, the guys we have in the 90s and the hundreds, you know, I just looked yesterday, late last night, because I was adding a player in, and they're just gone. Like, there's not that many players left. So for a team like the Cowboys that hasn't done very much, like on that list, there's not a ton of players left on that list. And they seem to fly off of there. Once it starts, it rolls and you better be ready to go. And guys just sign and sign and sign. And some of them probably sign a little too quickly, as we're going to talk about today.
And I'm glad you mentioned the top 100 list, because I pointed out, I think it was yesterday, we did a draft of the top remaining free agents. And I made it clear how much hard work I've put into the top 100 list, how many hours I spent splitting hairs between this guy and that guy. And I actually used the list that you put together and I had nothing to do with when it was time to figure out the best available free agents. Hey, why do I have to sit down and think about it? We've got a list. Guys are gone. Guys are left. we're just going to pull them off the list. Now, I didn't go in exact order, but at least it was a nice, helpful guide to get me through that draft. So thanks again for putting that together. And it is amazing how quickly the names go. And this year, you know, a lot of them were available. Like, you know, last year, the best of the best aren't available. This year, they were, even the ones that stayed put. Chris Jones ultimately stays put instead of leaving, but not the best of the best restricted by the franchise tag. Plenty still restricted, nine in all, but, you know, the Kirk Cousins of the world, the Baker Mayfields of the world, who could have moved on but didn't. Just a lot of names, a lot of movement, a lot of activity. And another one, as of last night, we knew that something was going to happen. We just didn't know what, because the Chargers were desperate to dump salaries and create cap space. They managed to redo the deal of pass rusher Khalil Mack. They redid the deal of pass rusher Joey Bosa. So they cut Mike Williams, which was a no-brainer, with a $20 million cash and cap number coming off a torn ACL. That's not a surprise. The only mild surprise is the news that Keenan Allen, not a restructured deal, a trade to the Chicago Bears for a fourth-round pick. And it's, I think, simple to look at it this way. $23.1 million is what he's due to make this year. And he's been with the Chargers for 11 years. $23.1 million. They don't want to pay it. The Bears are willing to pay it. The Bears are willing to give up a fourth-round pick for the ability to pay it. So you kind of look at that as the Chargers and say, well, what are you doing? Well, if there's another team out there that's willing to give you a fourth-round pick to take this guy on, maybe you should find a way to make it work and keep him around. It's just odd to me that the Chargers were willing to hand him over to the Bears. Now, I know the Bears have much more cap space, and it might be as simple as that, but this is a foundational player. It just is a reminder, despite all the social media thank yous that we see this week and happy birthdays, now pack your stuff and leave, that the teams will post. When it's time to go, it's time to go. When it's time for that interchangeable part on the giant football machine to come out, doesn't matter how long it's been in there, doesn't matter how well it's worked, doesn't matter what it's accomplished for the team. When it's time to pull that piece out and toss it aside, team's going to do it without thinking twice. That's what happened to Keenan Allen. All that accomplishment with the Chargers doesn't matter. Time to go.
Yeah, and he was the longest tenured player on that team, Mike, a third-round pick in 2013, and now he's gone. Now he's with the Bears. And my first reaction, I'm with you. I thought they should have made this work, because I do think he's a foundational piece to this team, a veteran player who all he does is have 1,000-yard seasons. He had another one this past year. So I thought they should have found a way to make it work, and my first reaction was, poor Justin Herbert. Like, who is he going to throw the ball to? Maybe he can request a trade to the Bears. Who says no? Number one overall pick for Justin Herbert. Both teams say yes to that.
Wow.
He's got Quentin Johnston and Joshua Palmer right now, Mike. He does have Gus Edwards. He does have Will Disley. But, like, who are you going to throw the ball to? I mean, it's going to be, I guess, like Patrick Mahomes has had to operate with the last couple of years, rather than having Mike Williams when he's healthy and Keenan Allen, which he has had. But I feel bad for Justin Herbert, because this is a rebuild, and I don't know how long it's going to take them to rebuild.
Well, they do have the fifth overall pick in the draft, and I think most are going to look at that now as the spot where they take the best available receiver. The problem is Marvin Harrison Jr. likely will be gone unless – and we don't know this because 2 weeks ago today, he didn't show up for the media session when we were in Indianapolis at the scouting combine. Unless Marvin Harrison Jr. has something up his sleeve where he says, I want to play for the Chargers. That's the only team I'm going to play for. And if anybody else drafts me, I'm not going there. Kind of the reverse Eli Manning 20 years later. Eli didn't want to play for the Chargers. What if Marvin Harrison Jr. wants to play with Justin Herbert? What if he wants to play for Jim Harbaugh? What if he likes what he's seen from Michigan the past few years, what Jim Harbaugh has been able to do with the Wolverines, even though he wasn't there for the game where Michigan lost to Ohio State? That's how great of a coach he is. Even if he's not there, his team wins. What if that's what he wants? We don't know that. And part of it is my own – all I want for Christmas is one of these players to stand up and push back against the industrial draft complex. But he didn't talk. And he either didn't talk because he's Marvin Harrison's son, which might be the Occam's razor explanation for this, or he didn't talk because maybe he's got a strategy that he doesn't want to share with the world. He doesn't want to get asked a bunch of questions about it and have to either lie about it or answer the questions or maybe have bad body language while he's trying to conceal what he's really thinking. We don't know. Now, we've heard nothing secondhand about anything he might have said in team interviews that's giving anyone pause, but that doesn't necessarily mean he doesn't have a strategy that will reveal itself. But if I'm a receiver coming out, all due respect to any of the other quarterbacks out there, yeah, I want to play with Justin Herbert. And look, I'm immediately WR1. Now, there's a lot of teams where Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be WR1, but they will address, I'm confident, the position in the draft. And there's other free agents out there, too. There's other options they have. Odell Beckham Jr. is still available if that's something they want to do. Joe Ortiz has experience with him in Baltimore. Jim can make a phone call to John and find out everything he needs to know. So they have other options, and it's obvious now that that is an area of need that they'll address one way or the other.
How far away, Mike, do you think this team is from contending? I mean, when you have a quarterback, you think you're going to contend. I mean, nobody expected the Texans last year to contend, and they got the quarterback, and they contended. Can the Chargers contend this year since they have Justin Herbert? I think there's probably a chance that they can. They're obviously in a very difficult division with the Chiefs being the king of all of football the last 2 years. But how long is this rebuild going to take for Jim Harbaugh to put together?
I think they are going to contend immediately. I think with Jim Harbaugh, looking at what he did in San Francisco in 2011, inheriting a team that went 6-10, under Mike Singletary with Jim Tomsula as the interim coach at the end of the year. Immediately, it was jumper cables to the entire organization for Jim Harbaugh. And you've got Justin Herbert. And I think that what happened this week, the message that is sent to the team when four of your best players are available in Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, and Khalil Mack, you're sending the message to the entire organization. There's a new sheriff in town. There's a new approach here with the Chargers. We've had a lot of great players in recent years, but we haven't done a lot of great things as a team. So some of these guys are going to be gone, and as it stands, half of them are gone. And the ones that stay are on notice. They're on notice. Hey, they were able to get Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa to play ball and redo their contracts and reduce what they're due to make. I don't have the details in front of me, but they were able to get something more palatable to them that wasn't just moving money around. And I think the message is there are no sacred cows in this organization right now, except for Justin Herbert, who Jim Harbaugh has already said he was starstruck to meet. And yeah, because he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and Jim Harbaugh is going to prop him up and put the pieces around him. Whatever they do, however they do it, however that roster looks when the dust settles in late August and the rosters on every team cut to 53, those guys are going to be ready to go. And I think they will be competitive and they will contend this year because and you may be one of the few people who get my Rosanna Dana, it's always something with the Chargers, but it's always something with the Chargers.
Yeah.
And now they have Jim Harbaugh. And whatever it was in the past, all the excuses that, that's all gone now, I think. I think Jim Harbaugh comes in. There are no excuses. We're going to go out there and attack each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. And they aren't going to get caught up in the things that the team has got caught up in the past. I've said, I think last season, the Chargers are the best dysfunctional team in football. They're dysfunctional, and of all the dysfunctional teams in the NFL, they're the best one. In this little group of dysfunctional teams that the best teams never have to worry about, the Chargers are the best one, and that's going to change this year. They're going to move from the dysfunctional category to the functional category, and let's see what they do.
Well, the thing is, Mike, when you have the quarterback, and we all think they do. Now, I having said all that, I think Justin Herbert has a ton to prove. You know, I think we put Justin Herbert up here, and I'm not sure he's earned up here. It's all based on potential for what he's done in the NFL so far. He still has a lot more to prove in the NFL. I mean, he's not in that top five quarterback position yet, but he certainly has the potential to do that. So I want to see more from Justin Herbert. But when you have the quarterback and you have the coach, you have a chance. And that's what the Chargers have. Obviously, as I said, they still have some work to do, especially at the receiver position. They've got to do more than just draft the guy. But they'll do that over the course of the next few weeks, probably get some veteran guys to come in. And that receiver market is starting to go. It was the slowest position that we have seen, and now it's starting to go, and players are starting to come off the board at that position. I think the Chargers will get some of those second-tier receivers who are still out there for Justin Herbert. But, Mike, when you have those two things, you have a chance. And when you look at that division with those coaches, with Sean Payton, who won a Super Bowl, Jim Harbaugh, who's been to a Super Bowl, won a national championship, and then Andy Reid with what he's done with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, I have said this, I wrote this on X, that is the best group of coaches, I think, in one division since back probably in the 90s when we had Joe Gibbs and Jimmy Johnson, and who am I forgetting, who was with the
Rich
Giants?
Rich Kotite?
Yeah, and we're not putting Rich Kotite in that, but that group of three head coaches who went into the Hall of Fame, Bill Parcells, who went into the Hall of Fame, were all coaching in the NFC East. They all won Super Bowls. And I think we see that now in this division with really good coaches. The only thing missing for the other teams in that division, we don't know about Antonio Pierce, but obviously we're talking about the Broncos. They don't have the quarterback yet to go with Sean Payton. They're still seeking that. But in the next few years, this could become that division that the NFC East was. You and I remember it. In the 1990s, when it was the Cowboys going to the, you know, first it was the Giants, and then it was Washington, and then it was the Cowboys, and they all won championships in that late 80s, early 90s period in the NFC East. And I think we could see that in this division. Really good coaches in this division and a couple of really good quarterbacks.
One of the ingredients that's allowed the Chiefs to be so dominant in recent years is they have more than dominated their own division. That's what helped the Patriots. You have a group of teams where you're clearly the best and you run roughshod over them. You pump up your record. You put yourself in better position, number one, to make the playoffs, first of all. Number two, to play postseason games at home and to win those games. And also, and I think this is something that gets overlooked, you don't cross paths with teams from your division in the playoffs, because I think those are always the most dangerous teams in a single elimination setting, because they know you. They're not intimidated by you. They would relish nothing more than the opportunity to pop the balloon that is your special season. They haven't had to deal with that yet. They haven't seen the Raiders or the Broncos or the Chargers in any of their postseason games. You get to the point where one or more of these teams starts qualifying and potentially crosses paths with you in the playoffs, you got to worry about that, because they aren't going to get knocked wobbly. You know, like the Bills, I still think at the two-minute warning of the divisional game this year, something short-circuited for the Bills. They went from being methodical to screw it. We can't worry about how much time we leave for Patrick Mahomes. Let's just throw it to the end zone. Like, they constantly are obsessed with how to beat Patrick Mahomes. These teams live it. They know every year they have to try to do it twice. Oh, and some of them have figured it out. The Chargers, at one point, were giving the Chiefs fits. The Raiders embarrassed the Chiefs in their own building on Christmas Day. Once Sean Payton gets a quarterback, that's going to be, and I'm glad they beat him with Russell Wilson last year.
Yeah.
Even without the preferred quarterback for Sean Payton, they beat them. So that it, you know, the call is going to come from inside the house. The threat to the Chiefs dynasty is going to come from in the division, if anywhere. And, yeah, you got to worry about the Chargers now. Chargers are starting to get their act together. Got to worry about the Raiders. Raiders, you know, they go out and add Christian Wilkins. There's already a pretty good defense there. We got dressed down by Max Crosby at the Super Bowl for not giving the Raiders defense enough credit by saying it's basically Max Crosby and a bunch of guys. It ain't a bunch of guys now when Christian Wilkins is there. And when, as we said with the Broncos, they get the quarterback situation under control, Chiefs are going to have a hard time. And one more thing about the Chargers. My son's very concerned that now the Chargers are going to try to get Justin Jefferson. My son has vowed that if the Vikings trade Justin Jefferson, he will stop following the National Football League entirely. So I still don't know what the Vikings are up to. I'm still not ready to believe that they have no intent to trade Justin Jefferson, because we've seen how that goes. But boy, Justin to Justin. I mean, if I'm Justin Jefferson, and I don't know what the Vikings' plan is at quarterback, short-term or long-term, and I know Justin Herbert is going to be around for a while, entered the league same year he did. Yeah, how could you not be attracted to that possibility? Now, I will say this, Justin Jefferson, before you get excited about playing in California. Somebody sent me a link yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but apparently the high-end tax bracket in California is in the process of going from 13.3% to 14%. So you really will be giving up half your money, maybe more than half your money, to Uncle Sam and Aunt California if you're playing pro football in California soon.
Yeah, you know, if they got Justin Jefferson, then I think obviously right away you'd say the Chargers are contenders, Mike, if they had that receiver. But they're gonna be good with Jim Harbaugh at some point, whether it's this year or next year or whenever that is. I do have complete confidence in Jim Harbaugh simply because we've seen it. It's not like a college coach coming in and there's no evidence of what he can do in the NFL. We've seen what he can do in the NFL. We saw it in 4 years with the 49ers when he took the 49ers to the Super Bowl and was on the verge of beating his brother in the Super Bowl. So I know what Jim Harbaugh can do, and I have complete confidence that he's going to win in the NFL however long that takes. It took him a while at Michigan, too, to turn it around. I don't think they're Super Bowl contenders this year, but I do think they're going to be better, and I think they're only going to get better each and every season that he stays there. I think that's the question, is how long is Jim Harbaugh going to stay with the Chargers? How long is this going to take, and how long is he going to stay to do it? Because that's kind of been his history, to move on after X number of years at wherever he's been. So, but I do think the Chiefs should be put on notice that, you know, there's going to be a team that's coming after you, and going to be three of them eventually in that division that are going to come after you. And they've got two of them at least have proven coaches who know how to get it done and win big games.
First year in San Francisco, NFC Championship, brink of a Super Bowl berth, couple of muff punts by Kyle Williams. Remember that? Giants win that game. 49ers had the opportunity to get to the Super Bowl the first year under Jim Harbaugh. They got to the Super Bowl the second year under Jim Harbaugh and made a furious run at trying to erase a huge deficit and win the game. And the third year, they got to the brink of the Super Bowl again against the Seattle Seahawks. So Harbaugh will, I believe, I'm confident, turn things around quickly for the Chargers, and it helps to have Justin Herbert and a coach who can finally press the buttons and get the most out of one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Let's flip it over to the Bears. They get Keenan Allen. They pair him up with DJ Moore. They lost Darnell Mooney to the Falcons in free agency earlier this week. They've got Gerald Everett, former Charger. DeAndre Swift signed right out of the gates. 10 minutes into the tampering period, a multi-million dollar deal is negotiated from scratch by the Bears for DeAndre Swift. They don't have a quarterback. Well, they have Justin Fields. But all of this points to what became obvious when we were in Indianapolis, that they're going to take Caleb Williams with the first overall pick in the draft. The one move they haven't made this week, and I don't know when they're going to make it, is Justin Fields. When and how and where do they turn Justin Fields into another draft pick? Replenish the fourth rounder they gave up for Keenan Allen. And it feels like at this point, that's the best they're going to do. And I don't know, on the surface, if we would have been told after the regular season ended, the Bears are eventually going to essentially swap Justin Fields for Keenan Allen, we would have thought it was a joke. But here's where they are. doing what they can to make the team better, but kind of stuck in this weird limbo because they can't find a trade partner for Justin Fields.
You know, Mike, there was a point where we thought Caleb Williams might not want to play for the Bears. And now you look at that offense and you're going, who wouldn't want to play for the Bears? I mean, you have two receivers who are number one receivers in Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. What they've done at the receiver position over the last 2 years has been nothing really short of amazing. This stat really got me, Mike. Keenan Allen in his career has 10,530 yards in his career. The Bears' all-time leading receiver is Johnny Moore's at 5,059 yards. They have two receivers better than anything they've ever had in their organization. And whatever quarterback that is, we're all presuming it's going to be Caleb Williams, walks into that door. He has these two great receivers in front of him. They could be like the Texans were last season. They could rise up and win that division, and all of a sudden we're talking about the Bears because their defense was already good. That's Matt Eberflus's specialty, and their defense was good last season. And I think they are way better, going to be way better on offense with the addition of Keenan Allen. Caleb Williams walks in. If he's what everybody thinks he is, he's got these two receivers right away and an explosive offense. This team could be sneaky good next year.
I tried to get Caleb Williams to look into the camera 2 weeks ago when we interviewed him at the scouting combine and say, I will only play for the Minnesota Vikings. He would not do me that favor. Because in 50 years of being a fan of the National Football League, discovering it on the day that Franco Harris caught the ricochet off of Jack Tatum and took it in for the touchdown, and then becoming, instead of a fan of the Steelers, a fan of the Vikings when I was 8 years old because I messed up in the head in many ways. The Bears have always been that team that are just kind of there, except for that one little blip, that aberration when it all came together for them in 1985, but fell apart almost as quickly as it came together. It was like a comet streaking across the sky. It's been the Bears aren't very good. Yeah, they went to the Super Bowl that 1 year, but nobody even remembers it. I don't even think the Bears remember it in 2006 with Rex Grossman. That's another aberration. Haley's Comet's come around twice for the Bears in the past 50 years. And it just feels like now they're on the brink of something. And I remember from 5 years ago when the first game of the season was in Chicago. I'd never been to Chicago. We're in Chicago for several days. And it's kind of like Chicago is this perfect hybrid of New York and Pittsburgh. And it just oozes football. And you understand why the old Superfan skit on SNL worked. I mean, they love football. And Soldier Field, it disappoints me that they're thinking about and they're intent on a new stadium. Soldier Field is the perfect place to be. And those fans, it pains me to say it. The 8-year-old version of me would never say this or even entertain the thought. But those fans deserve better than they've gotten over the past 50 years. And they're getting it now, at least the potential of it, when they upgrade to Caleb Williams and they have these receivers and they've had, you know, a good defense, good enough. You just don't have an offense. Like you said, when the leading receiver in franchise history is less than 6,000 yards, that's a problem. And they haven't had a franchise quarterback since Sid Luckman. They really haven't. Sorry, Jay Cutler. You didn't do anything by way of winning. You went to one NFC championship game and lost to Aaron Rodgers. He's not the franchise quarterback. They thought he was going to be. He's not. Jim McMahon, it wasn't him. It wasn't him that won that Super Bowl in 1985. It was the defense. I mean, he was a special player in his own way, but he wasn't a franchise quarterback. He wasn't a guy that transformed the team and carried the team the way that we see a Patrick Mahomes and a Josh Allen do. I feel like we can see that now in Chicago with Caleb Williams. And Bears fans should be happy, but I think also if I was a Bears fan, I'd also be a little bit leery, like, what's going to go wrong here? Is he going to say, I don't want to play for the Bears? There's been no indication he doesn't want to play for the Bears. And like you said, why wouldn't he want to play for the Bears?
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. I look at this team and I like what they've done in free agency and with this trade for Keenan Allen. I like what they did last year. Now, I was a proponent last year. I thought they should have traded Justin Fields last year and drafted C.J. Stroud. Of course, they might have taken Bryce Young, and they wouldn't have gotten D.J. Moore. So as it turns out, this could really be a great two drafts for them back to back that really rebuilds this team and rebuilds it in a hurry, because I think this is a team that can be good right away because that defense was already good. They're already keeping them in games. It was a matter of the offense scoring enough points to win. And I think they will now. Now, it all relies this year on Caleb Williams being a CJ Stroud and lighting it up right away. And we don't always see that with rookie quarterbacks. Sometimes it takes them more than a year. But I think he will. I think he will come in, and with the weapons he has, I think he has an opportunity, Mike, to put it together this year with this team, and they have a chance to win that division. I know what Detroit is. I know they went to the championship game, and you know I love Dan Campbell, but I do think the Bears are going to threaten the Lions this year.
Hey, that NFC North, Kirk Cousins knew what he was doing when he got the hell out of there. Put me in the division where it's none of the above, not in the division where every team is a contender, and one of them is destined to finish in fourth place in that division, and it very well might be the Vikings when you look around at the quality of the other teams right now. We mentioned the threat to the Chiefs that the Chargers might pose, the Chiefs doing what they can to address an area of weakness. Now that they have picked up some extra cap space by moving money around in the Patrick Mahomes deal, Chris and I talked yesterday, I think, what will they do with that cap space? Well, you have to address the receiving core. Hollywood Brown agrees to a one-year deal. We are in definitely the one-year deal phase of free agency. It's worth up to $11 million. This is the week where the phrase up to does a lot of work, making contracts look better than they are. We don't know what it's worth. We know what it's up to. And we don't know how you get up to. Do you have to be the Super Bowl MVP to get up to? Do you have to have 2,000 receiving yards to get up to? But it's up to $11 million. And usually when we see up to, the guy never reaches all the triggers to get up to that amount. Regardless, Hollywood Brown, a former first-round pick of the Ravens, was traded to the Cardinals during the 2022 draft, and there was this whole back and forth. Did Lamar Jackson even know it was happening? He acted like he was surprised and acted like he didn't know that Hollywood Brown wanted to move on, and it's not about Lamar, it's about the offense, yada, yada, yada. This is a guy that can run. That's the key to any offense in the NFL. You need a fast guy who will draw attention deep. That's what the Chiefs need. That's the thing they gave up with Tyreek Hill. Now, you also have to be able to make things happen when you do run deep. If you just run deep and they're not throwing you the ball and you're not catching it, eventually they're just going to ignore you. But that's the challenge. They've been trying to find a guy who would be a true number one in that offense. They tried to will Kadarius Toney there, and it didn't happen. Rashee Rice looks like he could get there, but this is a guy who's just flat-out explosive and can be a difference maker in an offense that still has the best quarterback in football.
Teams are enamored with his speed, Mike, as you pointed out. You know, he's one of those guys that I think needs to do a little bit more because, you know, he has 1,000-yard season. He was traded to the Cardinals, and in two seasons, he did next to nothing. And I realized Kyler Murray was hurt part of that time, but 118 catches, 1,283 yards, and 7 touchdowns in 26 games. That's like a season. That should be a season. That shouldn't be over the course of two seasons. But he does have the speed, Mike. And you know what? Patrick Mahomes can make just about any quarterback in the NFL better. Turn him into a mediocre receiver to a good receiver. The only one he's failed at, as you pointed out, was Kadarius Toney. He couldn't do much with Kadarius Toney. But other than that, Mike, he makes his receivers better. But when you go back and you think about the Chiefs season and you think about that receiving core almost cost them an opportunity last season to win a Super Bowl. You think about all the huge drops that they had, the offsides penalty, everything else that came with that receiving core. They could have cost them a Super Bowl championship, back-to-back titles, a chance for a three-peat, a chance to be the most special team in NFL history over the course of a three-year period. They get to do that now, and they've upgraded that receiver position. I think Rashee Rice, as you said, Mike, has an opportunity to be that number one guy. And then with Sky Moore and the addition of Hollywood Brown and the speed that he brings – this could be an even better offense than what they had last season.
I'm surprised Tony's still on the team. I really am. Yeah. I don't know if they made a promise that they'll try to trade him. I feel like after the Patriots game, because remember he had the moment in the Buffalo game where he's lined up offside, he gets the ladder from Travis Kelce, he gets wiped off the board, everybody acts like he wasn't lined up offside, he was lined up offside. Then he has the drop in the Patriot game the following week that becomes an interception in the fourth quarter. The game was already in hand, but it just felt like the last straw. Then he was injured the rest of the year. He came out and said he's not injured. I feel like that was the Chiefs' way of suspending him with pay, kind of like the Terrell Owens move, because you can't just send a guy home now. So he's injured. We're just saying he's injured. He says he's not injured. I feel like they're just trying to offload him, and I think they're hoping that somebody will offer them something, and that's not happened yet. Maybe they hold him through the draft and see if somebody offers them something. It just feels inevitable that he's going to be moving on, and this arrival of Hollywood Brown makes it even more inevitable. At least it feels that way. That Kadarius Toney is no longer in the cards for the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's go ahead and take a break. Kirk Cousins no longer in the cards for the Minnesota Vikings. Both Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the GM of the team, and head coach Kevin O'Connell met with reporters yesterday to talk about, among other things, whether they are on the same page as it relates to the quarterback position. We'll hear and see what they had to say when PFT Live continues right after this.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
My cat Rachel is the silliest cat I know. One time, she played inside a paper bag for 3 hours. What a mystery. But I'm glad her health isn't. Thanks to the color-changing litter from Fresh Step Crystal's health monitoring litter. This premium color-changing litter has pH-activated crystals that can help me detect potential illness early. That makes it easy for me to stay on top of her health and well-being. I may not understand all of Rachel's silly quirks, but I can keep up with the important things. Find Fresh Step Crystal's health monitoring litter at a store near you. Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company.
Kirk and Julie have been great members of this community for a long time, predating Kevin and my arrival here. He's been a pillar of professionalism and production at the position. You know, in these last couple of years, we've got a lot of great memories here, one of them being a division title ball that I looked at before I walked down here. He deserves a lot of credit for that. And we'll always appreciate Kirk and thank him for that. You know, these decisions are never easy.
Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, GM of the Vikings, talking about the decision of Kirk Cousins to move on from the Vikings, fueled by, at some level, the decision of the Vikings not to put the kind of offer on the table that the Falcons did. Now, and there's a little more on the front end of that that shows Kevin O'Connell going from looking straight ahead to, as soon as Kwesi Adofo-Mensah starts talking about Kirk Cousins, kind of looks down, kind of makes this, kind of does this just a little bit and starts. And I want to be fair to Kevin O'Connell. I think that's just like what he always does. If you watch the whole press conference, when he's not talking, he looks down. And, you know, like, what do? Do I just sit here like this, like Cindy Brady with the red light on while the other guy's talking? That's just what he does. And somebody needs to tell him, under certain circumstances, there may be some jerks out there, like that guy that runs PFT, who will see that and say, aha, aha, bad body language, aha, there's a dispute, aha. But it did strike me, it caught my attention, and whoever was working the thing in the control room goes to the one shot of Kwesi. Smart move there. But I did notice, in full and complete fairness, I just think that's what Kevin O'Connell does when he's not talking, at a press conference featuring more than one person. So they're selling a united front. And the only reason that I questioned earlier this week, and I have a feeling that some of the people in the organization aren't happy with me in the aftermath of it, but I have to always tell my truth, the truth as I see it, to the audience. When you've got Kevin O'Connell saying, I 100% unequivocally want Kirk Cousins back, and he's not back, you got to wonder what happened. What happened when the head coach wants him back? Did the head coach change his mind? Did the head coach want him back at a certain price? Was the head coach being tactful when he talked about it? And did the head coach not want to potentially damage his relationship with Kirk Cousins by saying, I want him back, but there's a limit to how much I think we should pay? We don't know. We don't know, but they're fair questions to ask, and the questions that came up yesterday. Fair to ask, proper to answer, and Quasio Dofamensis said what, you know, needed to be said. And we may never find out whether or not they're all on the same page, but my point was, in raising it, we need to watch what happens going forward, and we'll make the assessment of whether or not they're on the same page based upon what they do and how they do it going forward.
Yeah, Mike, I think I'm going to start doing that to you when you talk. I think that's a pretty good tactic by Kevin O'Connell. But to me, it was a little bit telling, Mike, even if he does that all the time, that, you know, he just didn't look up. And it came across as that, certainly, that he didn't like what transpired. And, you know, they have said all along, and Kevin O'Connell said it at the scouting combine, that they had contingency plans. We're going to see what those contingency plans are, because they now have to be put in place. But, you know, I understand Kirk Cousins wasn't that successful in the postseason, but he's still one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. And when he left Washington in 2018, Mike, that team has not been the same. 10 starters at quarterback since then. They'll have an 11th this season. So you better beware that getting rid of Kirk Cousins doesn't always work out the way maybe that you had planned it. You didn't want to spend the money, but now you have to find another quarterback, and you're not going to win unless you have a quarterback in this league. And who that's going to be remains to be seen. They say they have contingency plans in place. Let's see what those are. But they're not going to have Kirk Cousins, and so they've got to have somebody at least as good, Mike, to contend in that division. We just talked about how good potentially that division could be this season.
Layers of contingency plans is what the statement from Quasi Adofo-Mensah said on Monday, the statement they had ready to go when it became known that Kirk Cousins was moving on. This is not the same thing as getting yourself dressed for the winter elements in Minnesota. Layers can be a bad thing, because if you don't get plan A, what's plan B? Oh, wait, we have plan C. We have plan D. We have plan E. We have layers of plans. The problem is plan C, D, E, F, and G are there for a reason. You don't want to get down to those layers. This is like invading the layers of the epidermis with a needle or a knife or a rusty nail. You don't want to do that. You want to get to the top layer and be done with it. So anyway, here's more from Quasi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell yesterday on the question of whether everyone in the building was in alignment on their plan for Kirk Cousins.
You know, there was complete alignment, you know, with how not only, you know, going into the process, but how everything played out. From a standpoint of our plan for Kirk, everybody knows how myself, Quace, this organization feels about Kirk. And, you know, sometimes things just don't work out. And I think the most important thing is that alignment and the understanding that our plan's in place. You know, Quasey's used the word contingency plans, but those are all discussions and paths and avenues we can take. At a very, very important position, no doubt. But in the end, you know, as much as I would have maybe liked to have Kirk here, the right thing moving forward for our team is where we are today.
There was complete alignment. You know, this sport isn't such where you can just say on a binary basis, I want that player. I think we've been very clear since we've gotten here that we like Kirk Cousins. We've been very clear that we think we could win Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins. But that we have a sport that only gives you a certain number of draft picks, a salary cap, competition versus other teams. It's a resource-constrained thing.
There was a moment during that press conference as well where Kwesi Adofo-Mensah talks about the increase in the salary cap and the reaction to that when they found out 3 weeks ago today that the cap was going up to $255.4 million per team. And he said Kevin O'Connell rushed in. This is found money. And it almost, when you understand the context, like, hey, we can offer Kirk more now. That was kind of, not that he said that, but the bottom line is everybody's got that. That's what Kwesi's response was. It's everybody. It's not just us. So resources are constrained, but the resources are equivalent. And at the end of the day, they got past the point where they were willing to go. I'm still trying to get the Vikings' last best offer to Kirk Cousins. I have been unable to get it. And as Chris Sims said earlier this week, the longer it goes without knowing what the Vikings offered, the more likely it was an offer that was designed to be respectful but not accepted. Enough that it doesn't look like they're lowballing him or making him an offer they know he'll never accept. Something that's plausible, but something that's not going to be competitive with what the Falcons did. And in the absence of any leak, any information, anything along those lines that would shed light on it, I'm going to believe that it was an offer that they hoped he would not take. It makes me think of Ben Roethlisberger's last year in Pittsburgh. They made him an offer that they thought he wouldn't take, and he took it. And they're like, oh, what do we do now? We thought we were moving on from Ben Roethlisberger this year. So I think the Vikings, in a weird sort of way, are getting what they wanted. And, Shireen, I get your point about what Washington has been post-Kirk Cousins. I think from the Vikings' perspective, we got to think about what they've been with Kirk Cousins. And this is tough for me because I came around last year after the Monday night win over the 49ers when Kirk Cousins played arguably the best game of his career. And I thought, okay, they need to keep this guy and see what the remainder of his career can be. They've got 6 years in. Let's see. They've already paid the dues for 6 years as he keeps possibly moving toward a higher and higher level relative to the other quarterbacks. Let's see. Let's not let it happen somewhere else. And that said, one playoff win in 6 years. Two playoff appearances in 6 years. A guy who proudly says he doesn't work on Tuesdays during football season. Proudly. Defiantly. And I have a feeling that's going to change in Atlanta. I have a feeling that's just going to quietly shift, and he's going to understand I need to be all in if I'm going to get the most out of my abilities in the years that I have left playing football. But, and this is a criticism I had for the Vikings in the final years of Mike Zimmer's regime. Some would say that the criticism got Mike Zimmer fired. I wouldn't say that, but some believe that, including Mike Zimmer. I digress. For the Vikings, is it just good enough to be just good enough? And I think a lot of teams have to ask themselves that question. Are we content to be on the fringes of contention every year? We're alive past Thanksgiving. We're in it in December. Some years we get to the playoffs, some years we don't. And the years we get there, we're really not going to compete with the best teams in the conference. It's just a question of whether we exit in the wild card round or the divisional round. Like, I felt like the Vikings were just kind of happy to do that every year. And this move, wherever it leads, wherever it goes, I think their intent is to get a quarterback that allows them to be that team that the other teams have to worry about. Whether it works or not, I don't know. But I feel like that's why they did what they did.
Well, Mike, we heard the quote. We've been very clear that we think we could win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins. That's not true, because if you thought that you could win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins, you go out and you pay him whatever it takes to keep him. If that was the true belief, that's what you do. But we have no evidence that Kirk Cousins can win in the postseason. 0-1 in Washington in the playoffs, Mike, as you said, 1-2 in the postseason with two postseason appearances with Minnesota. This is not a guy who has been successful in the postseason. So going to draft, I would presume, a rookie quarterback, whether Sam Darnold starts this year or the rookie starts and Sam Darnold's the bridge quarterback, however that works out. But you get that rookie contract. And the way it works now, Mike, in the past, remember when you had that number one overall pick, was paid all that money and you're stuck with him. If you don't make the right pick, you're doomed. Well, now you draft a quarterback in the first round. He doesn't work out. Hey, you draft another one a year or two later and you start over again, but you can do it very quickly. You don't have to wait for that contract. You can just move on, say, this is not going to work out. Let's find a different quarterback. And there's so many more now veteran quarterbacks available, good veteran quarterbacks available each and every year, a free agency or through a trade or whatever it is. You can get a guy. So they do have an opportunity to draft a quarterback, build around him because he's going to be on that rookie contract. Let Sam Darnold start. If he's not ready to start day one, start out the season with Sam Darnold. Could be a little bit of a rebuild to start this year. But if they pick the right quarterback, if they get that opportunity, obviously the top quarterbacks are going to be gone depending on if they trade up and how far they can trade up and all those sorts of things. But they could end up, Mike, with a quarterback in the first round who can be that guy, who can get them to where they haven't been with Kirk Cousins. And so if that works out, then this was a great move. If it doesn't, and they draft that guy, they're probably not going to be there. This GM and coach probably aren't going to be there very long because you have to get it right. And you do have to get it right fairly quickly because you don't get many opportunities to get that right before – the owner moves on and says, I'm going to find somebody else who can get the quarterback position right for me.
And when you consider the Vikings are at number 11 this year, yep, and that the best of the best quarterbacks likely will be gone, brings me back to one of my favorite offseason themes, Tank Club. First rule of Tank Club is don't talk about Tank Club. The dirty little secret that all those wins that didn't make a damn bit of difference, that didn't get you to the playoffs, all they did was get you in a tougher spot to replace Kirk Cousins. Yeah, it was exciting while it lasted. And yeah, there was a moment where it felt like the Vikings could be competitive at a high level last year. And yeah, hey, up until the Kirk Cousins blowing out his Achilles tendon at Lambeau Field, they looked better than they were in 2022 when they went 13-4 and were winning all those games by a razor-thin margin. And then after Kirk Cousins, Kevin O'Connell taking average to below average quarterbacks and getting them to play at a high level. 400 yards from Nick Mullins. Are you kidding me? That's more impressive than what he did with Josh Dobbs. The problem is you're now at number 11. When are you ever going to get the franchise quarterback? You have to either know that one of the guys that slips through the early cracks is truly special, like Andy Reid did with Patrick Mahomes, who fell to number 10 and would have been taken by Sean Payton at number 11 if Andy Reid hadn't traded up. You either need to get lucky that way or you just need to bottom out 1 year and hope that it doesn't get everybody fired. Hope that the aftermath of 3-14 doesn't get everyone a pink slip and a thank you on social media. So how does that happen? It's not easy to pull it off. They're going to have their chance this year. One of the guys that we all think is second tier, if they think he's first tier, and they have to be dispassionate in their analysis, because if you're too desperate, you get Christian Ponder. All due respect to Christian Ponder, but that's what happened in 2011. When teams had quarterback needs, there was no free agency because of the lockout. So in the draft, Jake Locker, 8. Blaine Gabbert, 10. Both teams in the AFC South taking quarterbacks when J.J. Watt was still on the board to the Texans at 11. And then the Vikings take Christian Ponder at 12. Quarterbacks get overdraft by teams who are desperate for quarterbacks. But in the interim, they're not desperate because they have a quarterback that is a structure that allows you to cross a river or a stream. Here's Kwesi Adofo-Mensah on whether or not they can win with their 1 year quarterback, Sam Darnold.
You know, I'm gonna stop using terms. I think they get so I'm not gonna call him a bridge quarterback, but he's a quarterback that's on our roster under contract for a year. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, the position is about how do you run Kevin's offense? How do you overcome context when it's the play is not right? There's different skill sets that go into the position. That's how we evaluate it. The contract in itself is, you know, a series of options to stay or go, right? And sometimes an agent and a player will decide, hey, I want a 1 year and so that I can do something different. A team will decide I want longer. Those are separate conversations from the evaluation of the position and how you plan to build your team.
And look, I agree with his logic that a lot of these multi-year contracts aren't really multi-year contracts. It's a one-year deal with a team option after that. Now, the bigger deals, it's 2 or 3 years you're locked in as a practical matter, but it's a bridge quarterback. It's a let's see what Sam Darnold can be. Let's not make a long-term commitment to the guy. He doesn't make a long-term commitment to us. He could potentially have a huge year under Kevin O'Connell, and someone else will play the role of the Falcons next year and come in and whisk him away. But this is what they need. And I remember when we were at the Super Bowl in the press box, when we get there like 5 hours before the game, which is kind of fun for the first hour or two, but then it's like, is this damn game ever going to start? Somebody had reported that Sam Darnold was the kind of quarterback the Vikings would be interested in if they don't keep Kirk Cousins. And that was just 2 days after we had interviewed Kirk Cousins, had a chance to meet his lovely wife, Julie. She was talking to my wife, and just some of the things I picked up in talking to her, I started to get this feeling that it's over for Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. And when I saw that Sam Darnold thing, I thought, here we go. That's going to be their guy for 2024. It's going to be Sam Darnold. And glass half full, glass half empty, I don't know what to think. I know that Kyle Shanahan loved him. I know that Kyle Shanahan was happy to get him last year. I know that Kyle Shanahan would have had full faith that the offense would have been fine and the team would have been fine if he had to play. And he almost had to play that Bengals game because Brock Purdy got concussed against the Vikings, but somehow magically was cleared to play just 6 days after that concussion. He was good enough that they gave up on Trey Lance. They were comfortable moving on from Trey Lance. So we'll see what Darnold can do. You know, those early years of being with the inherently dysfunctional Jets created a reputation for the guy that he's going to have a hard time living down, but he's only 26, and we'll see. We'll see what the Vikings do. But if they use that 11th overall pick on a quarterback, they're telling us he's a bridge quarterback. They're telling us he's the temporary QB1 until the guy they draft 11th overall or higher if they move up is ready to go.
I would love to know what Justin Jefferson, I started to call him JJ, and then people might think I'm talking about Jerry Jones. But Justin Jefferson is thinking right now, because I can't imagine that he's happy with how this is playing out to play with Sam Darnold. But who knows, Mike? Sam Darnold certainly is going to have some weapons to play with. Maybe he turns into Baker Mayfield with what we saw from Baker Mayfield last season. Baker went into Tampa on that one-year deal, and guess what? The Bucs said, hey, we can win with Baker Mayfield. He's our quarterback. And maybe that's what happens here. Maybe Sam Darnold is good enough that the Vikings go, we can win with Sam Darnold. He's good enough. He's going to get his opportunity, I would think, unless some rookie comes in and just lights it up in training camp and the preseason. And all of a sudden the Vikings say, hey, he's our best quarterback. But it sure does look right now like Sam Darnold's going to start the season as the Vikings quarterback.
I think ultimately the most telling fact will be what they do with that 11th overall pick. I think that was the same spot where they picked Dante Culpepper in 1999, who looked like he was going to be the next franchise quarterback of the Vikings post-Fran Tarkin until he blew out his knee in Carolina in October 2005. He had an MVP caliber year in 2004, a year in which Randy Moss was injured and missed several games with a hamstring injury. Dante Culpepper still had tremendous numbers that year. That's the last time they took a quarterback that high. They've only taken quarterback in the first round, I believe, four different times. Dante Culpepper, Christian Ponder, Rich Gannon, Tommy Kramer. No, Tommy Kramer? Was Tommy Kramer was a first rounder.
Tommy Kramer,
and then there's one other who I can't think of right now. You remember the other one? Do you remember any? There was a fourth one, and I'm blanking on who it was. Anyway, if they do it this year, Sam Darnold really is a bridge quarterback, because that would be, and I guess it's a good problem to have if Darnold lights it up this year and is the comeback player of the year. And then what do you do with him next year when you have that quarterback you've invested the 11th overall pick in? So we'll see how it plays out. Another thing to see how it plays out, Shireen, and I love stories like this because you know what? They're all my fault. It's all my fault. If it wasn't for those meddling kids writing stories about blatant tampering by the Atlanta Falcons with Kirk Cousins, blatant, like in your face, double-barreled middle finger. I caught you with one hand in the cookie jar and the other hand giving me the finger. That's what the Falcons were doing when it comes to tampering. It was obvious they were tampering with Kirk Cousins. And I think this is what the NFL basically wants its teams to believe. We know everybody does it. Let's just not be ridiculously over the top about it. And it sure looks like the Falcons were ridiculously over the top, to the point where Kirk Cousins was talking to team officials during the negotiating window, which is clearly a violation of the rules, to the extent where he was recruiting Darnell Mooney from the Bears. He got involved in the recruitment of another free agent during the negotiating window while they weren't supposed to be talking to him. So there's two different types of tampering here that the Falcons engaged in. Think about that. We've never seen this before. The Falcons tampered with Kirk Cousins to the point where they solicited him, enlisted him to participate in the tampering with Darnell Mooney. It's unbelievable. It's like Inception. It's dreams within dreams and layers of tampering. And my God, but it's all our fault for pointing out what was happening. So anyway, yesterday, the NFL made it known. Oh, Teddy Bridgewater, by the way. Thank you. Teddy Bridgewater was the other
32nd
first
overall
round pick of the Minnesota Vikings. Thank you. Yeah, they traded back in and got him. He did his two-glove workout. No, he did no-glove workout at Pro Day. It was a disaster. Private workout, two gloves. Vikings fell in love with him at a time when everybody else was down on him. Anyway, back to the tampering. Yesterday, the NFL made it known. And it's weird because I saw like everybody say per source, the NFL is investigating per source. I got an email from league spokesman. There's no off the record in there. It's not per source. The league said it. There's no secret here. There's no whispering here. The NFL is looking into it. Now they said it's part of the normal process or something like that. There's nothing normal about what the Falcons did. The Falcons have stepped in it, Shireen, with both feet. The Falcons are busted. The Falcons are guilty. Now, every team is guilty of tampering to some degree. The Falcons are guilty of blatant multi-level tampering. Like, they went so overboard. I think their attitude was, and I've heard people explain, like, misconduct they were involved in by saying, I just went ahead and did it because I figured when I get caught, the punishment is never going to match up to what I did. I feel like whatever the league does to the Falcons is never going to fully rectify the extent to which they tampered with Kirk Cousins and Darnell Mooney. So it's all our fault for pointing it out. Anyway, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah was asked about it yesterday. He said that's kind of above our fray. It's an ownership level issue. Because it's the point I made yesterday, Shireen. At some point, the Wilfs are made to look like fools by this over-the-top blatant tampering. If you don't do anything about it, you're a patsy. You're a sucker. So they have to be pushing this because it wasn't just the run-of-the-mill phone calls that happened, meetings at the combine. This was an all-out assault by the Falcons to get Kirk Cousins. Kyle Pitts was involved in recruiting him, and I suspect if they investigate it thoroughly, they'll find out that Pitts was doing so at the behest of or with knowledge of the team. And again, it's all our fault for pointing out the obvious information that is playing out for all to see.
Yeah, Mike, that negotiating window opened at 12 Eastern time on Monday, and you have players signing or agreeing to terms within the first 30 minutes, hour. I mean, they're rolling in. That's when it starts rolling one after the other. You think they put those deals together in a 10-minute period, in a 30-minute period, in a 45? Of course not. Of course there was tampering. Of course they had meetings at the scouting combine. That's what the scouting combine is for. Of course they knew where they were going to sign before Monday. The NFL takes that and looks the other way because every team does it. Every agent does it. They want to know what's out there. They want to know where they're going and what the deals are. And they have that. A lot of them have it ready, right? When the clock hits 12, boom, we agree to this deal. We're done. So it's okay to do it in the NFL's eyes if you don't do it blatantly. But the Falcons did it so blatantly and didn't keep their mouths shut about it, with Kirk Cousins openly talking about what he did before it started, that they have to penalize them in some way. But you're right, Mike. That penalty, even if the Falcons have to send a draft pick or two to the Vikings, is not going to be nearly as much. I mean, they'll gladly pay it to get what they got in Mooney and Kirk Cousins to come there. So, you know, this is what we did. Yeah, we did it, whatever. And it's going to be easy to prove. I mean, the evidence is already out there. We have the evidence right here. So the NFL has to do something on this, but you're right. It won't be nearly to the extent that it probably should be.
Some people think that Rich McKay's status as chair of the competition committee will get them some sort of consideration. It didn't when they had the fake crowd noise incident from 8-9 years ago. He got suspended from the competition committee for 3 months over that. It didn't get them, an exoneration when they played games with the injury report when Bijan Robinson woke up not feeling well on a Sunday morning and they didn't update the injury report and he didn't play. He hardly played in the game. And everybody's like, what the hell? Where's Bijan Robinson? Oh, he got sick. Well, why didn't you tell anybody? Now, you could say they didn't get hammered the way they could have or should have. But I think, and the point I made yesterday, is this just the NFL checking a box and they'll meet with the Falcons and they'll accept their denials, the predictable denials, or will they do what really shouldn't be all that difficult to do? I could put together the list of 15 to 20 categories of materials you would want fairly quickly. You want to see text messages from Raheem Morris to Kyle Pitts, from Terry Fontenot to Kyle Pitts. You want to see all of Kyle Pitts' text messages or anything originating from the team, emails and text messages, because I have a feeling they were very reckless about this. I have a feeling there is an extensive, a treasure trove, paper trail, digital trail of communications, getting Kyle Pitts to go do what needs to be done. Maybe Kyle Pitts having a question. Hey, Kirk wants to know about this. What do I tell him about that? It'll be very easy to piece it together because I don't think they were being careful. Because if they were being careful, somebody would have told Kirk Cousins before his introductory press conference, don't mention that you talked to Ryan Pace on your drive to the team facility before 4 o'clock Eastern today. Don't mention that on Tuesday, clearly within the 52-hour negotiating window, when you're not supposed to talk to anybody from the team, you talked to the head athletic trainer. Don't say any of that. You can't say that you talked to anyone from the team before 4 o'clock Eastern on Wednesday. Got it? Good. The fact that they didn't do that, the fact that he volunteered that stuff, he wasn't being grilled. He wasn't under a hot light, sweating like Newman under his own hot light, trying to interrogate Jerry about mail fraud. He wasn't being questioned about it. He just threw it all out there as examples of how he fell in love with the team and why it's a great organization and all their great people. I was talking to the head athletic trainer just yesterday. Kirk, what are you doing? What are you doing? Well, nobody told me not to say that. That's the problem. So my point is this. If they didn't even have it on the radar screen that they should tell Kirk ixnay on talking to people from the team, they've been very careless. They've been very reckless. And anybody with the slightest amount of zeal is going to find out that they violated the tampering rules multiple ways, extensively, both as to Kirk Cousins and as to Darnell Mooney. Because how is it? I mean, let's think about that. I don't want to belabor the point, but let's apply common sense here, folks. How does Kirk Cousins even get to the point where he knows they're pursuing Darnell Mooney? How does Kirk Cousins even get to the point where he's the conduit to call Darnell Mooney and close the deal when he's not even supposed to be communicating with the team? And they're working through his agent. They're only supposed to negotiate through his agent. They're not supposed to tell his agent, hey, you know, it'd be really helpful if he calls Darnell Mooney to close this deal. So this thing is a mess for the Falcons, and they only have themselves to blame. And we'll see. We'll see if the NFL treats the Falcons the same way the NFL would treat the team that beat the Falcons in Super Bowl 51. Because we know that fire would be raining down on the Patriots if these same facts were playing out in New England.
Well, and what the NFL can't do, Mike, I don't remember the teams. Was it a year ago, 2 years ago? They announced right before the draft began that it was the Eagles and somebody they had given the draft picks.
Cardinals.
Who was it? Do you remember?
The tampering That's over right. Jonathan Gannon. The tampering over Jonathan Gannon. It was all quietly dealt with.
Exactly. They announced it right before the draft began that this was going to happen. Well, of course, everyone's tied up in the draft. It wasn't as big a deal as it should have been because the way they announced it, when they announced it, if they want to get serious about this and stop some of this stuff, the big stuff, I realize we're not going to stop the little stuff, and that's fine. Look the other way on that. But things like this, if you really want to put a stop to it, then you make the announcement at some point before the draft. You give the draft picks to the Vikings and you make it a strong penalty for the Falcons. And you write out exactly what happened and what rules they violated and how they violated them. And you make a big deal about it. But of course, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it will be quietly dealt with again. And we'll find out on draft night that the Falcons are sending the Vikings a low round draft pick or whatever it is. And we'll move on. Everybody will be too wrapped up in the draft to even think about what really transpired here with the Falcons tampering with Kirk Cousins and Kirk Cousins calling Mooney and all the things that happened with this that shouldn't have happened based on what the NFL's rules are.
We'll see, because the other tampering example that happened several months before the Eagles-Cardinals thing that we didn't even know about was the Dolphins getting whacked publicly right around Hall of Fame weekend, first round pick. And I remember both the Saints and the Buccaneers, because there was tampering with Sean Payton and Tom Brady back to when he was with the Patriots. So I suspect the Patriots were curious about this as well. Why don't we get some? They didn't get anything. The NFL took the first round pick away from the Dolphins, suspended Stephen Ross, suspended Bruce Beal, the limited partner, co-owner, whatever, of the Dolphins, who was the one who was working on Tom Brady for a period of years. They made that public, and they made that a big deal. And so let's see. We didn't know anything about the Jonathan Gannon tampering. We didn't know it was an issue. We didn't know it was a thing. And my theory on that continues to be, if the general public realized that the Cardinals were tampering with the defensive coordinator of the Eagles in the 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, the time when he should have been fully focused on the Super Bowl, they basically undermined the integrity of the Super Bowl by having him prepare, while he's preparing for the game, for his interview with the Cardinals the very next day for a head coaching job. They put something in his brain and on his plate that he really didn't have time for. He made time for it to the detriment of the Eagles. Anyway, I digress. But speaking of the Eagles, another one, and it's our fault, Shireen. It's my fault. It's my fault for pointing out what James Franklin, the Penn State coach, said publicly in a press conference that Saquon Barkley told him what happened when he was on the phone with Eagles GM Howie Roseman, which again, that's a no-no. That's a red flag. You can't have direct communications with the player during the 52-hour negotiating window. Here's Saquon Barkley from his introductory press conference. He got the memo on what to say and what not to say. Here's Barkley talking about what James Franklin had to say and whether he spoke to the Eagles directly during the recruiting period.
Coach Franklin, I think, kind of misinterpreted. The truth was the sell pitch to Penn State, how many Penn State fans are Philadelphia Eagles fans, but that was through my agent, and my agent told me that. So, it happened, and I'm let the Philly in on that.
See, this one is easier to clean up and look the other way on, because unless there is evidence of direct communication from Howie Roseman to Saquon Barkley, and I guarantee you, if Saquon Barkley did speak directly to Howie Roseman, it would have been agent with like a three-way call or in the room with Saquon on speaker and Saquon hears it, even though he's not directly talking to Saquon, they're not going to bust them on this. They're going to have a hard time finding a smoking gun. In Atlanta, Kirk Cousins stood at the podium and said, here's the smoking gun. Here it is. Oh, wait, I got another one too for Darnell Mooney. Here's the smoking gun for tampering with me. Here's the smoking gun for tampering with Darnell Mooney. Stop giving us a hard time about this. It's just a smoking gun. I mean, come on. So that's the difference. I think the Eagles won't get punished. And I think if the league doesn't do something to the Falcons, they make a mockery, beyond a mockery, of the rules that apply to these communications. Just get rid of the rules. If you're not going to do something about what the Falcons did, because it's the most blatant case of tampering I've seen with a free agent, if they don't do anything about it, just get rid of the rules altogether.
Yeah, I agree, Mike, on the Eagles. I think that what Saquon Barkley said was believable, and you can check Howie Roseman's phone, which I think they probably will, and he's not going to have a phone call to Saquon Barkley, and we move on, and the Eagles are off the hook. But, yes, something needs to be done about the Falcons because it was blatant. It's out there. The smoking gun, as you said, Mike, is right there in front of them. There doesn't need to be a long investigation. It's pretty cut and dried.
All right, we got to take a break. It's pretty cut and dry what all in means, unless it's not, for the Cowboys. The story of the offseason as it relates to the Dallas franchise, what the hell does all in mean, and does it mean anything close to what the Cowboys aren't doing? Stephen Jones got involved in the conversation yesterday. We'll talk about that when PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When it comes to scents, you should pick ones that smell like, well, you. Target gets it, which is why they offer a range of personal care products with fragrances for everyone. Be true to floral you with Dove Peony and Rose Body Wash. Live your fresh life with Degree Ultra Clear Deodorant. Express your decadent side with Love Beauty and Planet Coconut Shampoo. This spring, choose care that brings you joy beyond labels. Pick up new favorites at a Target near you or online at Target.com.